Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. You suck at marketing. Well, Manton, I think we were just talking before we started recording, and I think you are correct that we did not mention, or at least talk about in substance, the Watch OS. What are they calling it? Watch OS 2.0 now?
Yep, with a lowercase W.
W.
I saw that on the slide. I was like, oh my gosh, why are they doing this to us?
It wouldn't be Apple if they didn't have cringe-worthy names that we will grow to love over time.
Right. Yeah, I remember when MacBook looked terrible and weird, you know? It's like
iPad.
Yeah.
That got all kinds of ribbing. To be honest, they often all seem... I mean, even things like iMac, like way back when the iMac came out, it's like, why have an I in front of it? Everyone was like, is it an internet Mac? I don't know.
Right.
Didn't make a lot of sense. And then it became like the trademark of Apple's trademark to use lowercase I's and sometimes E's in front of their product names. And I guess this is just, somebody must have been in the room fighting for capital W.
Oh yeah.
And lost. And it's fascinating to wonder why somebody else was like, no. Why? I don't know.
Yeah. It looks so strange because it's not just lowercase W, you know, uppercase OS. There's a whole bunch of letters there. Yeah. I'm sure someone fought for watch spelled correctly, space OS.
Yep.
Which is probably what it should be. But
probably
whatever. Yeah, that's
and then somebody, yeah, somebody was like, but iOS has a capital I at the front. And then somebody else was like, yeah, but OS 10 is just OS space X. And then they were like, yeah, shut up. We don't care about Macs.
Well, see, and it especially hurts for me because I still call it Mac space OS space 10. I refuse to drop the Mac part of the OS X. I still want to call it Mac OS. Every time I write a blog post or anything, I always spell it out Mac OS X.
Yeah, you're one of those guys who refuses to version your apps with a .10 at the end.
Right. So we didn't talk about the Watch OS, but it was a huge thing, and for a lot of people at WWDC, I would think that might have been the thing. I guess you and I, you know, were kind of again. We're not doing a lot of active watch development.
Yeah.
Although I'd like to. And, you know, when an opportunity comes up that makes sense, I'll jump on it. But I'm not in the middle of any watch-specific stuff. So although I'm fascinated and I'm excited about the new stuff, I think it's great.
Yeah.
It's not something that I immediately would come home and start hacking around on.
Yeah. You know, when the watch first came out, we only had WatchKit, the pretty sweet solution that we fortunately only had to live with for, I guess we'll end up having to have lived with it for like 6 months of this year. I think I even said here on the show, I just don't know what kind of, I can't even think of a watch app. That has changed. I have thought of a brilliant idea for an iOS and watch app.
Ooh.
And it's out of character for me to not be prepared to share that because I think it might be one of those things where, you know, I always say it's not the idea, it's the execution. This time around, Manton, we're going to have a little mystery, in the plot of the Core Intuition storyline because, first of all, I'm not 100% sure that this idea is possible, but I need to, you know, go through the work of experimenting and seeing if the combination of APIs and just practically speaking, whether it works. Second of all, I don't know if anybody else has thought of it, and I'm afraid that if I mention it, somebody who's like smart about watches already will go, oh, of course that's possible, and they'll make it.
Well, that's a good sign that you're not sure if it's possible because
this
means that it – there may not be 10 other competitors if it's not totally obvious and totally easy to do.
Yep. So it's on my list of, you know, in my copious spare time, look at this. Probably what I'll do is one of these days I will wake up and I'll say, hey, that list of a million things I'm supposed to do today, forget it. I'm just working on this watch app. Right. And that's one of my big weaknesses as an indie developer, scheduling my time is to stick to my commitments, stick to my, I shouldn't say stick to my commitments. I'm like problematically good at sticking to my commitments in the long run, but, sticking to my priorities is a different thing. And so, you know, I wake up one day thinking today Mars Edit 3.7.1 will ship. And then 2 weeks later I say, oh, wasn't I supposed to ship something? You ever do that, man? Did you ever find like a fully formed, fully baked software release just sitting in version control? And you're like, oh, right. I never actually shipped that.
Sometimes.
No, you're not like me. That's right, because you ship everything.
I ship a little before it's exactly ready to go. So, yeah, I do that with other stuff, though. Like blog posts is a good one. Like fully formed, you know, edited, ready to go blog post that never clicked publish on. So, which is often worse because it's not as timely if you wait 3 weeks. But yeah, I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes that last 1%. Actually getting out the door is tough.
Right. And so I got a long list of things to do, but this secret mystery watch app, maybe this will serve as a nice little running mystery. We can check in about it mm-hmm. over the course of our future episodes.
Yeah. And I can remind you to ship it if you forgot and it was done.
Yeah.
It is interesting that the timing of all this, though. I wonder. So I was talking to someone who was thinking about doing a watch app. And one of the things I told them was, this is a weird timing thing. Like if you want an app soon, you have to do WatchKit, right? But if you want something that's really good, you probably want to wait for WatchOS 2.0 SDK.
Right.
And we don't know exactly when that's going to hit. But so you're in this weird area right now where I think you most likely want to wait till 2.0 ships to do an app.
Or to release an app.
To release an app. I'm sorry, yes. But there must be a lot of developers who hadn't gotten their app ready in time for the watch to ship or a month later. So they've got something using a watch kit that is mostly ready to go, but not quite. And now they're in this kind of dilemma. Do I just go ahead and finish that work and ship it? Or do I wait to the better stuff? And I don't know. It's probably not a really good position to be in. I think the best position is to either do what we did, which is almost nothing, or have something ready on day one, a month, 2 months ago, and now have a lot of time to do a 2.0 of your own thing.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think there's value for apps that already existed, already had a considerable, you know, user base and where a watch version was totally expected. I think there was value in making a WatchKit version of that.
Yes,
app.
Definitely. Yeah.
All new, brand new ideas. This is not a big deal in the big scheme of things. 6 months. Wait 6 months. Make sure that this thing, I mean, unless, here's the thing, my little secret watch idea, I guarantee you it's not possible with WatchKit. So I'm not like I face no risk that a competitor would independently think of the idea and make the app in the next few months.
Cool. That's good.
So I guess that puts me in the position where it's obvious I don't release it until at least day one. But I guess there's an argument to be made that if your app is possible with WatchKit, then there's that always that like early first to market advantage, right? Like if it really is something novel that nobody's done before and you think that somebody might do it before you, then maybe it makes sense to get it out there. I really, at the end of the day, Manton, I still cling to and believe that first to market is not really it's not like a deal breaker for competitors because you just see it again and again. How many weather apps have come out and been like, yeah, every other weather app you thought you liked, not good enough, right? And but there are other markets where it's undeniable that first to market is value. I mean, like a canonical example to me is eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Because these kinds of products where you get a totally huge advantage by having an installed base and that they just won't move. Photoshop is probably a good example in the sense that it's not only first to market. I mean, there are probably other things like Photoshop that just didn't succeed. But over the course of years now, man, that's so entrenched that, you know, even these really popular Mac indie apps like Acorn and Pixelmator, there's just no way they're going to convert the vast majority of those users.
Right. And the good thing for everybody is that there are so many users who want these types of apps. You can have a very nice business only having a small percentage of what Adobe needs.
Absolutely, yeah.
Especially if you're a small company. Yeah, I don't know who said this, but I think someone said it, which is that you can be first or you can be the best. And I still believe that. I think, you know, if you can be either one of those, you're in pretty good shape. If you can do both, fantastic. You don't have to be first, but you have to be great if you're not first.
Yeah, I guess with an example like eBay, the installed base of users actually becomes a feature of the app, the app or the service. You know, it's a measurable quality of the service itself. So to say, for example, you can be first or you can be best, being best includes having the installed user base that eBay has, at least in many respects. So you might say, well, it's obviously not true what you say because a much better eBay can come along and it will still fail because it doesn't have that installed user base. But the installed user base actually becomes part of the product.
Exactly. Yeah. eBay and anything like that that is more valuable, the more people that use it. Yeah. Best has a different meaning. It's not just the quality of the software itself. It's the whole, you know, community and kind of ecosystem around the software.
And bringing that back home to a point that's near and dear to you and I, Twitter is very hard to compete with because their installed base is a huge part of the product. And app.net learned that. Every little fledgling, you know, social chat network learns that.
Yeah, I didn't want to veer off topic too much on this, but as we're wrapping up this kind of thing, I'm curious just to hear your thoughts on, I don't know if you noticed this, but I blogged about it briefly. Elo shipped their iPhone app last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago. And I found that really fascinating because, one, this service, it's Elo, E-L-L-O.
E-L-L, yeah, right, okay.
they came out maybe 6 months ago or something. They got a lot of press and a lot of people talking about it and trying. And they came out. It's one of those things about the time was right where people were frustrated about privacy and ads and business models that they didn't feel really respected them as a user. And so it came out and people were like, oh, let's try this thing. And there was a little bit of controversy, a little bit of discussion about it. And then basically had a couple weeks of fame. And then everyone forgot about it. And then 6 months later, it's like, hey, we've got an iPhone app.
Yeah, that's...
And I found it really interesting. And so I looked at it again. There's an interesting community there. Very, very small. I don't see how they're ever going to get even as big as app.net. It just seems very difficult. But then there's all this other stuff missing. That they're not doing any of the things that I would do if I was trying to do this, right? There's no API. There's no... I mean, there's just all the stuff that's missing. And yet they have some money and they're kind of rolling ahead. And I don't know what it means in the big scheme of things, but I wonder, curious at your take as someone who is on Twitter and is more plugged into the mainstream of social networks, I guess, like how you think that's been perceived.
I'm just looking at Elo right now. First of all, they don't have Elo.com, which is, I guess maybe it doesn't matter these days, but that's bad, I think. You go to Elo.com and it's like some other Elo.
Right. If you're going to have your product name be a made-up word, maybe you should try to get the .com for it.
I remember I logged into Elo 6 months ago, like you said, I guess, and I probably never logged into it again. I'm logging into it right now, and there's a couple messages from friends of mine who are like, okay, I got the iOS app. Anything else to do here? Actually, listener to the show, Chris Hansen, says, finally, an Elo app for iOS. Thank you. So maybe I haven't looked in here. Chris, you probably listen to this eventually. If you listen to this, I'm not mocking you. I'm fascinated by what appears to be your legitimate admiration for this network. So maybe you can chime in and let us know what's good about it for you.
I would like to hear that because he's in my little Elo timeline too. And although I'm noticing, unless I'm missing something, it was 2 months between his last message.
You're right.
And the current one.
And if you scroll down, it says, like, there's this, and I hope I'm not sharing anything private. Is it public stuff? I don't know. It seems innocuous anyway, but he says something like, he has this like sarcastic post 6 months ago. Does Elo have an iOS app yet? No. And then other complaints about the service. He says, am I surprised? No. Disappointed? Yes.
Well, and the problem is it's falling into that kind of pattern of where the only point of the new social network is to talk about the new social network.
And right.
App.net certainly went through that. You know, when it started, a lot of people were like, this is interesting. But all the discussion was about app.net. And eventually, the people that couldn't figure out how to use app.net differently than Twitter kind of dropped off. And then you're left with a smaller group. But the people that are not just talking about app.net anymore, they're talking about other random stuff.
Right.
I don't know if Elo, at least for our community, I don't know if Elo ever got past that stage. I would think not. But like I said, I spent a little time like clicking around other parts of the service. And there are active users there. And they're posting like really like great photos and drawings. And there's just like interesting little pockets of the community in there. But in the big scheme of things, as I blogged about, it's like I think they're doing everything differently than I would do. And they're not adding anything to the web that I can see. Like they're not doing anything that's open. They're not trying to be less, centralized. And they're falling into all the same patterns that Twitter and Facebook would do, except for the ads part.
Yeah. It looks kind of, I mean, the design of it in many ways is beautiful, I think. And it's like, it's an example, I think, where maybe if app.net was designed a little bit more like, I don't know, this, it would have had some more traction. I can see how it's attractive in a way that in some respects app.net wasn't. Kind of has like, if you go to the noise tab, it kind of has like a pinboard feel with all the pictures and tiled together. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Manton. I don't know. Speaking completely from a point of ignorance, but nonetheless judgmentalism.
Welcome to the show.
I think this is just one of those things where they're burning through VC money. it's virtual reality money. That was one of the criticisms too. So that my bias is towards that. I think one of the criticisms when they launched was, oh, no ads, huh? But you're like venture backed. And how are you going to ever make money, right? Wasn't that the sort of controversy? Yep.
And they didn't disclose at the beginning how venture-backed they really were.
Right, they were acting like they're a bunch of like dorm room punks putting together a site.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I haven't checked in with it recently, but it feels to me like, the way venture capital works, if you are not running a totally crazy, like money-losing venture, you can run for a long time, especially if you don't have that many users, right? Because you're not going to use all your resources. So I don't know how much money they got, but you remember that secret app for iOS?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's gone now, right? Did you know that?
Yeah,
it burned out like in a fiery flame out because basically, after having a bunch of venture capital, they realized, oh, we don't really have a business here. I mean, I'm putting words and intent in the explanation, but it feels to me like a lot of these venture backed services these days can appear vital only because they have money in the bank, and then at some point the bill's going to come due, right? And they're going to be like, well, where's the— and to some extent, this criticism applies to app.net too, even though they were largely customer financed at the beginning. There's still like this question, like, okay, what happens when the money runs out? And I feel like a lot of these sites, like Elo, for example, it's almost like they're just lying in wait for Twitter or Facebook or both to have some kind of like lucky for them, for Elo, stumble, right? Like you find out one day, oh, both Facebook and Twitter have revealed all of their private information of all their users, and or you know, have sold all of their users, I don't know, something to marketers, mm-hmm. and something that positions Elo to be like, wow, this is our opportunity. This is where we rise above, you know, the fray and show our values were the right values from day one. And maybe then they have a chance, but I just feel like there's a bunch of sites like that, this, that just feel like Hail Marys to me. Like maybe we'll just throw the football all the way down the field and hope that somebody catches it. But 90% of the time, 99% of the time, nobody catches it.
Right. And I still kind of respect anyone who tries to do this, because I think it's very difficult and ambitious. And I think there is something to be said for the whole lying in wait and having something ready to go, yeah. if the world changes around, mm-hmm. you. But like bringing this back to the earlier discussion, it's like, think about two things we've talked about on the show already. Photoshop versus, like, let's say Acorn, where Acorn can have a really nice little business regardless of how big Adobe is.
Right.
And then contrast with what you said about eBay, where you can't have exactly the same kind of small eBay competitor business because no one's there. And social networks are a lot like that too. You can lie in wait all you want for Twitter to mess up, but if I go to Elo when your iPhone app is released and there's nothing in my timeline at all,
yeah.
it's going to be hard for me to get into, yeah. it. So you need a little bit of both. You need the good timing, you need a good service, but you also need there to be something there. There is something there, but I don't know if it's enough.
Yeah, it has to be something unique. I mean, that's the bottom line. It has to be something unique, i.e. I can share things with people I can't reach through other social networks, or I can share types of things that I can't share. And maybe that's true of Elo, you know, looking at it. I don't know. You could definitely do longer posts. So that's something that makes them distinct from Twitter. It doesn't make them distinct from Facebook. So mm-hmm. in a way, I think they're sort of better positioned as a Facebook alternative because they have the whole no ads thing and you can do long form sharing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Here's the problem that most people don't care about ads. Right? That's the newsflash. Yeah,
there's a lot of people who care, but it's just not enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like not having ads is not compelling enough to make a service great. Like you need something else. And they've got other things. They've got the noise thing, and they've got, like you said, the different layout, and they've got a strong design that is polarizing probably if you don't like monospace fonts, but it's like, there's something different there at least, and that's good. But it doesn't feel like enough. Facebook and Twitter are so well established. I think if you're trying something like this, you need something that's more compelling or something that's fundamentally, yeah. different at its heart.
You know, something that comes to mind, and I agree, Manton. Well, I it's too late. We've gone off on a long tangent about this. But
mm-hmm. I tried to bring it back with the whole eBay yeah. and Photoshop.
Something thing. That sort of comes to mind as a viable social network, I assume it's still very viable. I assume it's still very popular and active. I am a member there, but I don't use it too actively. It's Dribbble, you know, the designer-oriented mm-hmm. social network. And here's a great example of something where it's like, it's not like other social networks don't let you share a photo and then have comments about it. Like Flickr does this. But Dribbble seized on something, I think, which is that we can offer something very particular to designers. And I don't know enough about even the features of the way it works to know why that works so much better than, say, just using Flickr or, you know, having – it's kind of obvious why Twitter doesn't work, because it doesn't have a good, like, message-oriented response, like, feedback kind of layout, I think. Facebook could have worked for this, but I think this is just an example of something where they noticed one differentiation they could make. So you could imagine, for example, other social networks popping up that made a similar distinction. Like, what if there was, and maybe there is, but what if there was a social network that offered features that were above and beyond what other social networks offer for tracking professional sports?
Right.
So, yeah. Like,
it's so fun. It's so funny you say that, because that's something I almost built.
another coulda, shoulda, woulda, huh?
It's actually still in my notes somewhere. Sports, exclamation.
Sports
mark.
As a business. Social network. Idea. Yeah. Actually, it's brilliant. Yeah. If Elo, for example, were the best way to talk about games and teams and players, and like every time you mentioned a player by name, it popped up, you know, a little like the way that you mention something on Twitter and it pops up like the business card or whatever, you know, you mention, I don't know how it works exactly, but you know, there's Twitter cards, right? And you can have like links to apps in the app store and it pops up like a little card of the app. And if there was a social network where every time you mentioned a team, a player, even a jersey number, maybe, like you can imagine, like mention like the, what's your team? The Spurs. Mm-hmm. You mention the Spurs and you mention number 13 and it just intuits that you're talking about whatever player that is. Pops up a little capsule summary of that player.
Right.
Now we're talking, right? Like there are people who would be willing to be a member of Twitter, Facebook, and sports.social.
Which is probably an actual domain name.
Probably is now.
Yeah, that's funny, that example, because I really did almost build something like that because I thought it would be interesting to bootstrap kind of a larger project. And that sports is something like you know, the NBA finals were a couple weeks ago. You go on Twitter and there's a lot of people talking basketball, and there's a lot of other people that are like, oh, I better ignore Twitter for 2 hours because I don't want to see all this junk about a sport that I don't care. And so like another social network would be like, that's the place you go for everyone that wants to see all your sports related things. But this is also kind of a larger topic that we've talked about before, which is like, so you built something, you think it's great. You suck at marketing, like most of us. And so on your marketing page, you describe all the ways it's great and people are confused and they don't get it. Instead, what I think really great companies tend to do is they pick one thing that it does, not the 10 things, one thing. And they say, this is great for this. Like, this is why you want this app. And then when people say, oh, I could use that, and they download it, and then they discover there's actually a lot of depth there and there's a lot of other things it can do. But in the marketing and the pitch for it, it's kind of like it's focused. You kind of understand what the thing is for. And so I've been building something around microblogging, something that's all related to all the stuff we're talking about with these social networks. And this is something I've struggled with too, is like, maybe it should be more focused. Maybe when I launch this, it should be maybe not as focused as this is for sports, but maybe there should be something about it that is very, you know, more narrow than the actual product really is, just to get people into it. And then a couple months later, you start opening it up and you're saying, okay, no, really, it also does all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard building stuff and marketing it, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we should do that. We should build something and market it. Well, as it happens, Manton, we do have something to market and promote. Of course, our collaboration as podcasters and job board runners leads us to our sponsorship, and we moved it to the end of the show this week because we want to also make a little pitch to people who are listing jobs on the job board. The job board, by the way, jobs.corient.org, is totally insane, on fire this past week. Often we like to sort of summarize some of the most recent job listings. There are so many up there. Just go to jobs.corient.org and get a new job, period. Don't tell your boss. We got great jobs up there. One is a remote part-time junior iOS Swift developer job from Oak Snow Consulting. This is kind of a deviation from the sort of more typical listing for like full-time kind of industry standard jobs. This one says explicitly in the description, it's an opportunity for someone in the learning phase of their career with lower earning expectations. So translation, it's not going to pay like the Apple jobs on the job board, but that is a unique opportunity for somebody. So go take a look at that. We also got a new job listing from iRobot right here in the Boston area. They're the Roomba folks, of course, and they're looking for an iOS engineer. Desk.com is back on the job board from Salesforce. They're looking for a senior iOS developer. MJD Interactive in San Diego has an iOS position. We got stuff in Austin, Texas, San Francisco, of course, Apple jobs in Pittsburgh and Cupertino, as well as Vancouver, Washington, and Portland, Oregon. So it's full of jobs. Two pitches here for you as we close up the show. One, please go to jobs.corient.org and look at the job listings if you're looking for new employment. Second, if you are a company or an individual looking to hire, please go there and first of all, post your job listing. But second of all, as you may have noticed on our podcast lately, we have we haven't been filling up all of the sponsorship slots, frankly, because Manton and I are not the best at marketing and sales. But here's our idea. We think that the Core Intuition job site, especially with how popular it is right now, would be a great it would be a great opportunity for some of these people and companies listing jobs on the job site to also choose to sponsor a show outright. So you can learn more about that at coreint.org/sponsorship. And this is an opportunity still for anybody, not just people listing jobs on the job board, to sponsor the show. It's $1,000 and you get exclusive sponsorship of an episode. So this is still a great value, especially given the size and quality of our audience. You can read more about it on that page, but our suggestion is if you have listed a job on the job board, follow it up with a full sponsorship of an episode, and we will talk about the job listing and the company in more detail during our normal sponsorship break in the middle of the show.
It's great to see all those jobs on the board. Check that out. And Daniel said, if you want to sponsor the show, we'd love to have you. Good talking to you again this week, Daniel. We still have more from WWDC that we probably need to catch up on. We still, at the end of the show, I keep forgetting, we still haven't talked about the Layers Conference and AltConf and everything else. So we'll continue to sort of roll out some of this WWDC discussion as we make it through the summer and all these beta releases.
We'll just get to the last WWDC 2015 topic just in time for next year's WWDC.
Probably so. That's good. This stuff goes in cycles every year.
Yep. All right, Manton. Well, take care of yourself and get some good work done, and I will chat with you again next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.